All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley on a brisk but beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the Groove Hour with Pastor Antonio McAllister. We like to call him Pastor T, and certainly have a phenomenal show today. But what's even more awesome is that this is actually the launch of our monthly show with Pastor T, and we have a really great show lined up. We've got an incredible guest, first off, let me ask you, how are you, my friend?
Joe, I am doing well. I feel great. I made it into 2021.
Yeah.
Had a wonderful time with some time off during the holidays. I'm refreshed, rejuvenated, and just excited about 2021. How about yourself? So good to see you.
Yeah, and likewise. You know, same exact way. I think it's the holidays are so important. It's a spiritual uplifting. The end of the year, 2020, was an incredibly stressful year for so many of us. And the thing is, I say it to my wife every year, you know, the holidays is just, it's where you get to rejuvenate yourself. And, you know, coming out of this one, I feel the same way. I feel phenomenal. I'm looking forward to, I don't want to say this too loud because I'm afraid to say it, but a much more, much better and new and improved 2021. Certainly, we're not out of the pandemic. This year now, I mean, the spike has gone through the roof. And so we're all social distancing. And before we start the show and before we introduce our outstanding guest, which I'm really looking forward to, I want to bring into the program our sponsor and periodic co-host of the broadcast, Austin Weinemann of Weinemann Pain and Wellness. He wants to welcome everybody to the show. He's excited about it as well. Austin, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Joe, I'm great. Pastor McAllister, Pastor T, it's nice to speak with you over the radio. I know we exchanged some nice text messages the other day. I do look forward to speaking with you further, but I just wanted to genuinely congratulate you on the launch. I think our listeners are in for a treat with your insight and what we're going to talk about. So I'm very excited, and I'm happy to be here, and I wish you a happy new year, happy and healthy.
Well, Austin, thank you so much for your kindness and your benevolence, and I'm just excited about some of the things, topics that we're going to discuss on our shows, and just look forward to just lending information and learning as well. But happy new year to you, sir.
Happy new year. Yeah, you know what? The radio is an interesting platform. It can be really great, or it can be really bad. And and unfortunately, I've witnessed both. But I think when people are genuine and they're real on the radio, I think listeners are more attuned to what's being spoken about. So I like for everyone to feel comfortable, be transparent, talk about stuff that's really worrying them or concerned about, and there's, you know, 2020 was a year filled with that and then some. So I think we have a lot of good material, and I'm here to support, and I'm happy for what's to come.
Well, you couldn't have said it better myself. Certainly we look forward to having you in the studio with the good pastor, certainly in your words, definitely looking forward to what's to come. Austin Weinemann of Weinemann Pain and Wellness, we appreciate your sponsorship and for making it all happen.
My pleasure. And by the way, I just hope you all know there, I would be there in person, but over the holidays I was out of state, and just to comply with CDC guidelines, I am quarantining. And I am going for, a COVID test just to prove negative. I don't feel symptoms, but I just wanted you guys to be comfortable and safe. So that's, I apologize. I'm not there. I just, out of everyone's safety, I'm quarantined. So I'm calling in today.
Thank you, Austin. We need many more people who think like you do.
Absolutely. Better safe than sorry. 100%. Can't wait to get you in here, Austin, and, safe quarantine, my friend.
I appreciate it.
Have a good one. So Austin and our sponsorship is, you know, that makes it all happen. One of the things that is important to them, and it was actually Austin's vision for the show, is to have a community-based show, and keeping it real, and at the same time, you know, important issues. And so, if you would introduce our guest.
It is my pleasure to introduce and, as we say in the church community, present to some and introduce to others. That's something we say when we have a guest minister at our church. But one of my dearest friends, one of my colleagues in the gospel ministry of preaching and pastoring, Dr. Damon Jones. He's the senior pastor of the Bible Way Baptist Church in West Philadelphia. I was in the 1300 block of North 52nd Street. And Joe, I know you know a lot about the city, but 52nd Street is also known as the Strip.
Okay.
He's a social activist. He cares, has a heart for the community, has a heart for the people. He's a loving pastor, loving father for his beautiful wife, Dr. Melissa Jones. And our friendship has blossomed over the years. He's become my confidant. He's become my encourager. And we often, in our preaching, we bounce things off one another. And you'll find out very shortly, Joe, in the listening community, to know that he's a wealth of knowledge.
Well, Pastor Jones, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be here today. And thank you, Pastor McAllister, for letting me know about this. It's fantastic.
Well, you know, we appreciate you coming over and being featured. And if you would, first off, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Bible Way Baptist Church.
Well, I've been pastor of Bible Way Baptist Church now for just about 27 years. And it's been a phenomenal experience. They're great people. As Pastor McAllister said, it's right in the heart of West Philadelphia on 52nd Street on the Strip. And it's just a lot of great people. We do a lot of outreach because outreach is in the DNA of that church. So sure. I'm the second pastor in about 68 years. And the founder, who spent 42 years before I came,
wow.
He was heavily involved in serving that community. And so we continue that legacy because my philosophy is that a church is not a church unless it impacts the community where it is. There's enough places that are just kind of like siloed off, but sure. The church is supposed to be a part, an active part of that living community.
Talk about the congregation. How big is your congregation?
Actually, I don't know, Joe. Well, with COVID, I have no idea anymore. There's so many things I don't know now. We were carrying upwards of 1,500, you know, a little north of that for a number of years. And, you know, then as COVID hit, you know, there's different aspects now because now everything is online.
Sure.
So we are seeing more people that are showing up in our worship on Sundays. And we're doing Wednesday, you know, Bible studies and prayer services virtually. So I'm honestly not really sure at this point where we are.
It's interesting, though, because I've heard in a number of people talking. I forget exactly where I heard this, but when people – during a time where people sometimes are – you know, it's a volatile time and they're hesitant to go to the political leaders. They want to go to the church leaders. And they talk, you know, talk about the vaccine and a lot of those things. Trust is such a big, important part of, you know, you hear, and you hear so much in the media of what may be or may not be wrong with, you know, a vaccine, and maybe it's political. Who the heck knows? But the bottom line is this: they trust their church leaders. They trust their pastor, and that's. A great voice of comfort. It's interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if when we all come back, that it's you doubled your congregation because so many people right now are lost.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. This may not be another type of organization. This may be because right now we need our leaders of faith.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, you probably just scared him because although it would be exciting, you know, he up talked about he has two morning worships, and if that happens, he has to go to three or more. So I don't know how excited he would be about that one, Joe.
Listen, I've gotten a little lazy. You know, with
1,500 people, you keep you busy, no doubt. Austin, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir.
How about that? So By the way, feel free to join in at any time. Your wisdom is always welcome. This was Austin's vision. This was, you know, the show to impact the community, to have a show that's positive. And I can honestly say that with all the pastors that we've had on the broadcast, every week I'm getting blown away by the topic matter. And one of these days, so one of you is just going to find me when you come out. I'm going to be in the congregation, not the choir.
Well, most of us don't go in the choir.
You won't
either.
See us in any of it.
But you might see Austin, because I heard he's an excellent singer. Is that true, Austin?
In the shower.
You in good company, Austin.
Yeah, at least I think I'm pretty good.
Well, having said that, though, I mean, you know, it's fantastic. During these times, you know, Pastor Jones, how's the communication been on a personal level with a lot of the congregation? And I'll say, Pastor T, also, stressful times.
Very stressful. A lot of people are hurting. And, you know, this COVID situation has, you know, when it causes people to have to be hospitalized, normally as a part of our ministry, we're going around visiting people in the hospitals, but now that can't happen.
Right.
And then you have families who are, you know, dealing with loved ones who have been hospitalized,
sure.
And they can't even be with their family members.
Sure.
So it's a difficult situation all the way around. I've done a number of funerals recently,
and
some COVID-related. And what is really painful is that sometimes the family doesn't see the person who passed until they get to the funeral. And it's a very difficult thing. Funerals are already emotional, but this takes it to another level.
Sure, because they may have died alone.
Yeah, they died alone. And the family didn't really get a chance to say goodbye and all those type things. So it has challenged us as pastors to look at how we serve our people in a pandemic. And none of us have ever pastored through a pandemic before. So we're leaning on each other. You know, like Pastor McAllister is my comp, we talk and we try to come up with ideas and how can we serve our people in a better way.
Sure.
But it's just difficult. And we, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but we kind of have to make it up as we go.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
Because there's no precedent for it.
Yeah, having said that, you know, I'm sure as much as a religious counselor, you're a personal counselor many times often for situations. But you hear stories, obviously, with counselors, seeing counselors. I mean, having these relationships, you know, leaning on one another has to be a big part of, okay, I'm not the only one going through this.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is, because we, like I said, we get on the phone, and not just us. We may get on a Zoom call with a number of pastors that we're all friends with. And sometimes we just need to share among ourselves, because it's as difficult on the person trying to provide the care as it is the people that need the care.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like everybody else. There's been deaths in our families, and you know, so we're all dealing with it. But it is there's another level of comfort there, because you do have a friend that you know is a friend that you can lean on and get some advice and counsel from.
Yeah, so interesting. One of our colleagues, Dr. Dandridge Collins, wrote a book. I don't know how many years ago the book came out. He wrote a book entitled When the Tow Truck Needs to Be Towed. And when I tell you, Joe, and I'm sure Dr. Jones can attest to this, how comforting it was for us. Because oftentimes, and I've been pastoring 14 years, even past about twice as long as I have, oftentimes until we sit still, we don't realize how fatigued we are. Until, you know, we come to a place where we get at the edge of burnout, we don't realize how much of an edge we are. And obviously we all have God to go to, but oftentimes, you know, as being trained in counseling, one of the things that we've learned, one of the most beneficial aspects to counseling, is being a good listener.
Sure.
We don't always have the answers. Oftentimes we have people in front of us on the phone or whatever, and we just let them just vent.
Sure.
And a lot of times that's a part of, you know, their deliverance. That's a major part of their breakthrough. So to have people in our lives that are confidants, that are part of what we call a no judgment zone, really helps us tremendously.
Yeah, you mentioned burnout. And during this time, those people that are dealing with other people and their issues. You know, right now, like you mentioned, Pastor Jones, having the you know, individuals call your phone and going through you know, very stressful financial times and a lot of other issues, illness, losing loved ones. How do you avoid burnout?
Well, one of the things that I've learned to do, we're also taught this thing called self-care.
Sure.
We've learned, and we've learned to exercise sitting down somewhere. Just last week, myself, Pastor Jackson, Pastor Josh, this was the fourth year that we had what we call an end of the year retreat. We went down to the National Harbor in Maryland for 3 days and just relaxed.
Sure.
We got there the first day. We got onto one of the Zoom calls Dr. Jones was talked about, and we shared, we brainstormed about some of the things that we want to try and implement and do in 2021. So things of that nature, just really some R&R, you know, some self-care, some downtime. One of the things that I've gotten back to that I've gotten away from, I got back to during this pandemic, is personal reading.
Yeah.
You know, some of the books, you know, this guy has me at bookstores across this country buying books, and 80% of them I hadn't even read. So I got back to doing some personal reading in some very different areas that really helped me mentally.
And that's important. Austin, you guys are dealing with individuals who are injured, but you're also dealing with, you know, people that are high risk at the medical practice. And I know you take every precaution, but it's still a stressful situation, and some people can't even come in. You're doing telemedicine. How does the practice handle situations like that? And your father is one, you know, Brent Weinerman, who's the medical practitioner at the practice. How does he deal with it on a daily basis? Because, you know, he's dealing with people. He's a hands-on doctor, and he spends a lot of time with his patients.
Yeah. It's hard right now. I mean, my father's the chairman of the pension board for the city of Philadelphia, and at times, he's been practicing medicine for 43 years now. And, you know, at times he has to make a very critical decision based on his medical opinion. And at times people are seeing him, unfortunately, who may not be on the straight and narrow and may not be fully truthful, and they're not entitled to pension. Of course, he wants everyone to have pension, but it has to be off his medical opinion. And a lot of time, I bring that up because a lot of times in these sessions, and sometimes he'll sit with patients for 2 hours on a medical evaluation, and they cry, or they yell, or they raise their voice, and there's a whole gamut of emotion he experiences. And I think the biggest thing, I've been trying to get into meditation, and I've tried it here and there. I haven't been, you know, consistent with it really. I've tried it here and there, but I bring that up because the virtue of just listening, like Pastor T said, just listening. I think that's what alleviates a lot of people's anxiety. I mean, we're in a world where technology is pushing us forward, but it's also doing a lot of harm. And I think it's making people quick-tempered, have quicker expectations, and I think losing sight of being in the moment. So I think, like Pastor T said, just sitting and just sitting still and relaxing. Those aren't just luxurious things. Those are needed for your personal health, your self-care that was mentioned earlier, your self-care, your relationships. It's an absolute must, and I unfortunately, too many people don't pay the attention that warrants.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it. I'm trying to – I have seen your father spend hours and hours with individuals during this time. We're dealing with the stress just of so you have large congregations, and you're dealing with people that you're normally kind of hands on. You know, they're right there in front of you. Are you using, and Austin mentioned technology, and it can be right now. You can get oversensitized with so much coming at you, especially on the internet, and but that's how we communicate these days.
Right.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned books, and I think it's just essential that we hold on to some sort of technology, although it's outstanding. They have all these meeting, everybody's, you know, these dating apps, which no one's doing. But I mean, the socialness of staying, like Austin said, in the moment, mm-hmm. being able to sit down and kind of, you know, live the way, you know, like we grew up. You know, you read a book, you call, mm-hmm. you call somebody, you have a conversation, you see them on the street. There's nothing like that. Now we don't typically have that because of technology and obviously COVID. Is technology coming into play at the church?
Sure. I mean, all of our Sunday morning worship experiences are completely online, and our Wednesday night Bible study and prayer service is online. And we even decided to do fellowships for our people where everybody can log on to Zoom, and that way we can all, you know, interface with each other. And we did our first one this past Sunday, and it was phenomenal. I mean, just because you don't realize how many people you just have not seen since this pandemic started. And then you also start to realize how much people are going through, but you don't know it now because you're not interacting with them
right.
like we used to. We used to see them every Sunday, and that was an opportunity for people to tell us, you know, what they were going through.
Right.
Now, you know, with a lot of the communication interrupted over a long period of time, it's almost as though we fall out of touch.
Yeah.
Now, unless you have a great system of staying in touch with your folks, like Pastor T does, where he picks up the phone and calls his people all the time, those that don't actually do that, you can fall out of touch with the people that you serve.
Being a giver, okay. So, givers and takers, okay? Somebody who's staying in touch with your congregation, somebody who's giving, mm-hmm. Is that a big part of who you are?
It's a big part of who I've become, and I try to specialize in transparency. I was raised as an only child, so...
When I got
called to become a pastor, my pastor said to me, listen, those only child syndrome moments, they will not work.
Right.
You know, I don't want to talk to you today. I don't feel you. You know, I'm going to go to my room, close my door, and that's going to be the end of it.
Right.
And one of the things that I believe I've grown in several areas over the last 14 years, but one was in my era of patience, learning one of the things that we're taught in counseling is communication. You know, it's the best key to establish great relationships. And so I haven't always been that way. And I've grown, as I've learned more tools to try and become a more successful pastor, I realize the significance that's connected to communicating to your people. And this, during this pandemic, it just hit me one day that there are some people who call me pastor that we've never talked on the phone before. So on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I'm very intentional when I get to the office of spending a few hours going through the church roll and just calling folk. And I called one of my leaders, I guess it was about 4 months ago. Hello, who is this and what do you want? She responded, come, and we ended up laughing about that because mm-hmm. she didn't know her pastor's telephone voice.
Okay.
That was the first time I said, this is your pastor. It's, oh, Pastor, I'm so sorry. And then, it turned into an hour-long conversation, which I had to stop because I can't call everybody and talk an hour.
Right, right.
So,
that's amazing.
But, right. What it did was, you know, Pastor, I'm so glad that you called. You know, she's a widow, no children gone and grown, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so it just, you know, for maybe 6 hours a week, you know, I talk to everybody at least every other month.
And I mean, it's incredible.
That's what he taught me. I started.
It's almost
doing
like outreach
that.
Right now during a difficult time.
Yeah, he taught me that. I've been doing it as well.
You know, Joe,
not
to interrupt, and that's what so many people don't do. They don't pick up the phone and call. That, you know, people, they can text and they just send these messages, but to actually pick up the phone and call is unfortunately, it's a dying art, and it's a beautiful thing that both of you do that. I respect that.
And I'll tell you, it's interesting about that, Austin. Now everybody's picking up the phone and texting. You know what I mean? So that's why it's a dying art. Mm-hmm. And you think it. So in we do a lot of legal shows, and you know we get the opportunity, and Austin has co-hosted a number of those shows. And one of the things that you and I always say on those shows, Austin, is, you know, to be a really good lawyer, it's not just enough to know the law, but having that bedside manner, so that, you know, you're you know, we're in a service business. You're in a, you know, you're providing hope, and you know, and you know, your inspiration to individuals during this very difficult time. And I really admire it, because the well, you know, you're constantly going back to the well on a daily basis. And not only that, you're calling people. So, you know, some people, you catch them on a bad day or something's happening in their family, obviously you just took on their stress. Well, we talked about, rejuvenating, but when you get in a situation, I'm sure you, there've been a number of times, it's 7 o'clock at night, you've been communicating all day long, you know, your dinner's late, you know, I mean, it's getting cold and you want to just sit down and take 5 minutes. Even if you're superhuman, you need 5-10 minutes to rejuvenate. Mm-hmm. But you got on that phone and you gave of yourself. How do you dig down? How are you able to do that when sometimes you may just feel like, you know, how much more can I give right now or today? Give me 5 minutes.
Well, I actually had that situation recently. I have an aunt who's our last living aunt, and she's 86 years old, and she ended up in an emergency situation and ended up in the hospital. Two older sisters of myself, we rushed to try to get to her, to get there to the hospital, but COVID, you can't get in. So we are able to work it out with the medical staff to let us just get in to see her. And thankfully they granted that. We didn't get home that night until probably around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So I finally get to the house, you know, finally lay down. It's almost 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, God.
And by 6, the phone is ringing because one of the members of our church, her son was killed in a car accident.
Oh, my God.
And so immediately you get up, and despite what you're dealing with,
sure,
and despite your own sleep deprivation,
sure,
you know, for, and Pastor T he'll be able to attest to this. It's almost like you get up and you turn on the switch and you go right back into it, because they don't necessarily know what's happening with you, but they just know that they need you at that particular time in their moment of need. And we just, most of us, the reason why we can get so burnt out is because we're programmed to rise to the occasion.
Sure.
We don't give it a second thought. You just up and do it.
I mean, you have to.
And most times, Joe, and again, we bounce off each other. Most times, the ones who are making the call, they don't know that there could be several others. Like, I'm the only one, is their mentality. My need,
sure, sure,
is the one that needs to be met right now. And I get it. You know, you're thinking about yourself. But the other thing is, to answer your question, one of the things that helped me is that there have been times when I got I need my pastor call, and that call helped me. You know, it could have been, we talked about it, and I said, you know what? I'm going to make so-and-so laugh right now.
Yeah.
To only realize I also needed to laugh.
Yeah.
You know, I also need to take that deep breath,
sure,
and decompress. And so oftentimes it could be therapeutic for us.
Yeah.
It really can. It's not a Jedi mind trick or anything like that, because it's just like.
Well, that's because some people really give you good energy.
Mm-hmm.
When you get somebody who is, you know, gives you that good energy, and, you know, it just feels good to talk to them. It's rejuvenating. You know, it's like you said, maybe you don't even expect it for, you know, for that second or whatever, but it's,
Can I be honest, Joe?
Yeah.
everybody that we talk to on the phone, we don't want to talk to.
Right.
There's some people who, when the call comes up,
let me rephrase that. Not every person is somebody you want to. I didn't really. Austin, it's funny. My brother said
the phone has those. You know, can I call you later? Sorry, I can't talk. They already programmed it.
I'm in the middle of something right here. I gotta get. Right. But. My brother once told me, in our previous business, we were down the shore and I was just sitting there and we were talking. I was worn out. And this is what I really wanted to say before you just said that.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, people give you good energy and people give you, you know, not as good energy. And or they take the energy from you. And when you talk about givers and takers, even in a pastor situation, and Austin, as a medical provider,
sure.
You know,
a ton of people that take my energy.
Right, and so you can sense somebody who's a giver and a taker that wants to add as much as they take back, and or at least are courteous of your time, mm-hmm. to understand that you're a person too. And I remember, mm-hmm. in our business, I remember some people would come and it was all what they wanted. You know, oh, I got five people at the door. Can we come in? I'm like, is there any time you're going to come in and just ask me how I'm doing, or you know, something like that? We're gonna go to break right now, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the youth that's so important to both of us, and as well a little bit about your career in criminal justice and I cannot wait to get to that conversation. So we're going to have more from the Groove Hour after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 1617 John F. Kennedy Boulevard, Suite 1100, Philadelphia, PA 19103. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand. For each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
They just told us right away that we're gonna house you, we're gonna feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
They've saved my family from financial ruin. It allowed me and my wife both to focus on the most important thing, which was the health and well-being of our son.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything's been taken care of.
We could never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Groove Hour. I'm Joe Doherty, responsible by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. Pastor Antonio.
Hey, Joe.
Yes, my friend.
I just wanted to, this is what I'm talking about. This is, I just want to genuinely thank Pastor T and Dr. Joe for their time and coming on the radio and talking about things that matter. They're not self-serving. This is the whole reason why we wanted to sponsor a show like this. So, bravo. I really appreciate it.
Austin, you take the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I literally said that when we went to break. I'm like, every time we come on this show, and you and I have done a lot of shows, I get surprised. I said to them, and I'm sure you're going to be with me when it happens, one day they're going to come out to their congregation and me and you are going to be sitting there. It's going to happen. You know what I mean?
That'd be wonderful.
We'll be singing in the choir and everybody's going to be going, I guess, well, them two white guys can't sing at all. This is not good. No, somebody put them over there.
They said it about their pastor.
Yeah, really?
And y'all are welcome anytime.
Well, we appreciate
anytime.
It.
Anytime.
It's interesting, though, because also we're going to talk about community and the youth, and also get into Pastor Jones's experience with the, you know, as with the prison system and as CEO of the Philadelphia, what's the Philadelphia?
It's the Philadelphia Department of Prisons. I'm on the advisory board.
Okay. Yeah. And so you know, we talk how during the break of how important the youth are in your communities. And is that one of your priorities, obviously?
Yes. And Joe, it's so interesting how when I was featured with Pastor Jackson last month, we segued into the conversation about the young man that was killed on 61st and Locust a few months ago and started talking about, you know, the penal system and things of that nature. And that's when Dr. Jones popped in my mind, okay, you want me to bring a guest? He's going to be my first guy because of the experience. And I guess it was about 4 years ago, he invited myself and a couple other colleagues to go up to one of the up on State Road, and they were having an open house, and it just blew my mind when I understood some of the programming, some of the training, some of the opportunities for education that goes on in the penal system that a lot of, you know, people who are far removed from the penal system aren't aware of. And particularly I wanted Dr. Jones today, if it's okay, to speak to this piece about how they deal with those who are dealing with emotional issues. Mm-hmm. Because it's apparently, what's the young man's name that was murdered? 61st and
Walter Wallace.
Walter Wallace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how they talked about how he had, you know, a lot of emotional issues that weren't dealt with, and he had been in and out of the penal system. And so it's just been heavy on my heart because as much, you know, training and carpentry and things of that nature, educational opportunities, if the mental piece is not addressed, you know,
And it also has to be addressed in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had, you know, he's passed away now, but I had an uncle who had, and he was a very talented guy. But he had a lot of issues that were very difficult issues to deal with. They were that mental illness, but he was also a big dude, and he was a street fighter. Now, that may sound like, but let me tell you something. When you have a situation like that, mm-hmm. it's an absolutely difficult situation for any family to deal with. And if there are no programs, and by the way, that started when he was a young person. If there are no programs, and at the criminal justice level, if there's not a priority somewhere, then we're going to have other Walter Wallace's. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about criminal justice and reform. But, you know, those programs that you're talking about are vital, for when somebody comes back into society. Talk about the young people that are incarcerated that may be there for a long, long time that you deal with.
Yeah, it's for 34 years now I've been working with at-risk juveniles, and they are all over the place. They're in our schools, they're in our churches, they're everywhere. And without the proper programming out here, they're going, in a lot of cases, they're going to end up on State Road, or at least in the system. The kids that I work with, I have about 35 juveniles anywhere between, I'd say, 15 and 17 who have been charged as adults. Right now they are in what we call RCF, Riverside Correctional Facility, on State Road, which means that they are being held in an adult facility because the law says that once you are charged as an adult, you can no longer be held in a juvenile facility. They're separated off and kept away from other adults, but here you have these kids. Now, when they go to court being charged as adults, they are looking at some really hard time upstate, 25, 30, 40 years to life. And again, these kids are 15, 16, 17 years old. So so that's the group that I do the most work with. Pastor McAllister and I, we work on a foundation that I developed called the Brotherhood Foundation, and the core of it is to have a basketball game at the jail with the boys to build relationship. And then we break off and we have mentoring time, you know, with the boys. It has been one of the most richest and most rewarding experiences of my life because most people get to see these kids only in the newspaper. They only get to see a mugshot. What most people don't see is the backstory.
Oh my God.
What is it that caused this young person to be involved in whatever they are accused of being involved in?
Sure.
Many of them are not guilty of anything, but that's got to work out through the court process. And then there are some who are potentially guilty of something, but at the same time, they're still kids, and they still have found themselves in a situation where they need, you know, people who genuinely see them as human beings and not just as a criminal or a number or a jumpsuit.
Do you ever go in and say somebody failed this kid? So in other words,
every time.
You know, 15, 16, 17-year-old kid, I wish, and I know Austin's coached young kids in different sports, and I know Pastor T has been involved also. And so one of the things that I would love to say to young kids at the high school level. So I coached a little high school football at Roman Catholic. And you wish you could sit down and say, guys, this is counting. It actually counts. You know, you have no idea that if you're going to throw away your 14 and 15-year-old years, life as we all sit here, is in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it counts when you're four. We can all sit down and go, man, I made that mistake when I was a young kid. But when you get to that level,
yeah.
How is it when you actually get through to a child or a kid at that age and they realize?
You know, it's the most amazing experience when you go in and you're dealing with this child who we know has been failed. And maybe in his own home, in the schools, just in the community, maybe even in churches, the child has been failed. And they end up looking for family somewhere else, and often it's just not the people that the child should be hanging around. Before you know it, you know, they end up, you know, in a green jumpsuit and shackles. When you go in and and I do a lot of individual conversations with the kids. I don't do a lot of group stuff. Most people that work with kids know that you're usually more effective one-on-one than you are with the
right
group. And once you go in and you have the conversation with this kid and you build a relationship and you build trust, you start to see that there is a little person in there crying out,
oh, yeah,
you know, for somebody to talk to, somebody to listen,
oh, yeah,
somebody to understand what they went through, and someone who is not going to judge them based on what they're being accused of. In all of these years, I hardly ever ask any kid what they did to get here.
Sure.
You know, over time they will tell you, and they will, you know, and that's based on whether they start to trust you or not. But it's about relationship, and I can tell you that it's rare that I leave there without tearing up, you know, based on what I just experienced with these kids. And the point that Pastor T made a little earlier in another connection, you know, I go in to try to encourage them. Sometimes I leave encouraged by them.
Yeah.
They're accused of some horrific things, and the jury is still out in terms of whether they're guilty or innocent. But they're all kids, and they all deserve to have, in my mind, an opportunity to smile and to laugh and to have somebody there that they know really cares about.
Pastor T?
Yeah, it's interesting because hearing the stories, I've never gone to this facility where he's working with RCF with the young people, but just to hear the stories is heart-wrenching. It's heart-wrenching. But, and again, as we talked last month, Joe, it lets us know how much we need to turn up the heat on the front end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in terms of preventive measures, in terms of impacting each other. Our colleagues across the city, you know, have been challenging one another. Just you know, hold down your corner. You know, be impactful where you pastor and do the best you can. You know, and so that's a challenge that we have individually and collectively. I think a difference can be made. But this man here, you can hear it in his voice. He has a passion for it. It's not something that he's done for a season. And I just think that we need to bend more ears to help people understand the reality of these young lives.
Oh, yeah. No question about that. Austin?
And can I also go ahead?
I'm sorry, Pastor.
That sometimes these kids actually get out. And so part of what we're trying to build in our foundation is an aftercare program for them so that they don't end up going back.
By the way, I cannot agree with that more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all part of criminal justice reform.
Right.
I mean, there's
right.
so – we can go – I mean, you know, Austin, you want to jump in here?
Sure. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you know, Dr. Jones, what you were talking about with the Brotherhood and – the basketball games, I think it's brilliant. You know, when I coached seventh and eighth graders, and they were, some of them weren't troubled, but they were having some difficulty socially and personally. And there were certainly times, especially at the end of the season, where I felt invigorated. It was a wonderful experience, but there were times where my students came from a home where the parents or parent didn't provide the healthiest environment. So I think basketball, if you can only help the child, and this is just my opinion, please opine if you disagree, but if you can help the child, I think you can only help them so much if they're going back to a toxic environment.
Right.
I think if you create an ecosystem like the basketball, I think you're not only helping the child, but you're changing or helping mold their environment. So you're hitting them both personally and environmentally. And I think that's two major ingredients for success.
Hey, Dr. Jones, would you mind? Well, he shared a nonprofit that he organized, and I've been working with him, the Brotherhood Foundation. Some of the vision, some of the goals that you have.
You just spoke directly to what our vision is. We use the basketball to build a relationship and get the kid to open up to us. One of the most profound experiences I've had was we had a young man who I think was about 17 years old who had been accused of a homicide, and very, very standoffish, kind of a rough kid. You could tell he had been through so much in his life and wasn't a big talker. And I remember after working with him, and you know, sometimes you just have to give the kid some respect. You got to listen. You got to not be so quick to do all the talking. And let them learn to trust you. And after about a month, you know, I walk back in and this kid comes running up to me. Dr. Jones, I passed all of my classes. He was so excited.
Unbelievable.
That in jail he passed all of his courses. And that said something to me. The excitement that I saw in this kid told me that at home he probably didn't get any kind of encouragement based on, you know, doing well in school. So as Pastor McAllister is saying, what we're trying to do is not just do the basketball game and the mentoring while we're there, but when they come out, like you just said, they can't go back into a toxic environment. And if they do, there needs to be an alternative to that environment, meaning the Brotherhood Foundation wants to come alongside that kid and help them to not navigate themselves back into that environment and back into the prison system. But we want to continue our mentoring, you know, abilities with these children once they get out. One of the things that we dream of having a gym and a safe place where these kids can come and spend, you know, when they get out of school, spend the day there. A place where you can continue playing basketball, a place where there are video games, a place where we can do one-to-one mentoring, and a place where they can do weightlifting and all of those type things where rather than going back into that neighborhood, they can come and spend, you know, that time with us.
Yeah, Austin, you talked about basketball, and so the pastor. What that also does is when you're dealing with a sports-type situation in a structured environment, it builds other types of character. And teamwork and you know, I mean, if you know, I remember about 5 years ago we were just starting the radio shows and we were doing a labor show, and every week we talked about, you know, what was going to happen at the school. The school district was constantly talking about, you know, we were selling buildings, which they did sell, but they were also talking about cutting back, you know, with the extracurricular activities. You might as well build the prisons then. Because you got self-esteem, teamwork, and all those intangibles that you learn through sports and team, you know, environments and being coached and things like that, that build character, you're taking that away. So if we're going to just throw the math and the science in there and we're just going to send them home afterwards and, you know, like Austin said, there's not – and then I know you guys, agree, but, if there's not a structured environment or something, you know, for them to look forward to, you know, them to have to know that somebody cares about them, that somebody, that they care what somebody else thinks. That's a big deal. Like people always sit there and go, wow, you know, don't worry about what anybody else thinks. Well, I know what you mean when you're talking about, you know, forging a way in life. Okay. If you want to become a pastor and your old boys in the corner have a problem with it, well, they're too bad for them.
Right.
However, when you're talking about parents, you're talking about your pastor, you want them to think highly of you. Mm-hmm. And if you care about what they think and there's a structure there, that goes a long way.
Yeah, Joe. I'm excited about this. When Dr. Jones originally asked me to come be a part of the Brotherhood in a financial perspective, just to handle the finance aspect of it. But I'm enthusiastic about it. One reason in particular, because this man has spent 60% of his life working with challenge youth, working with people connected to penal system. So sure. I've been a pastor and pastored people long enough to have been exposed to fly-by-night stuff.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so what I know about him and his connection to this, and what I know him about anything that he puts his hand to, that this is not going to be a fly-by-night. And at some point post-COVID where we could really work a little harder with some of the things that he's envisioned to do, stay tuned is all I wanted to say.
And, absolutely.
And you also mentioned individuals that are, this is really one that eats at me hard, who are incarcerated and they may or may not have been guilty. They couldn't afford a lawyer.
Yep.
Okay. They're fighting a criminal justice system that is got unlimited resources, and they're going in with a public defender who may be overloaded with 250, 300, 400, 500 cases. Now, I don't know. We all pick our where we're going in life. You know, somebody wants to be a carpenter when he's 18. He's a carpenter. You know, that same kid wants to get into law enforcement. He doesn't know what he's getting into, but you're getting into an industry at times, and it's obviously it's needed, and there's some good things. But fact of the matter is that you're probably dealing with hundreds of thousands of people that have no way to defend themselves, no really legitimate way to. So that's one area.
Yeah.
There should be no quota systems. I don't think you should be getting raises for arrests. I think you should be just as happy to find somebody not guilty mm-hmm. as you should be. And I heard actually the Attorney General of the United States said that recently. Barr, he actually said, you know, I mean, about the FBI that there were too many people, you know, focused on making, you know, on finding somebody guilty, like it was a trophy or something like that.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of areas. And then when somebody gets out, let's not set them up for failure.
Yeah.
Let's give them an how are you going to get a job if it's a non-violent crime? Okay.
Well, you know, there's so many crimes against these kids, and one of them is restitution. You know, if they, for instance, stole a cell phone, and at some point, you know, as a part of your case, you have to do restitution before this case is over. Well, part of why the kid stole the cell phone, you know, is they didn't have the money to buy it.
Yeah.
So there won't be any money to pay for it.
Sure.
But the case never goes away until there's restitution. And then there's the whole cash bail system, you know, which is really built on the backs of poor people. If you have money to post bail, then you get out. If you are poor and you don't have money to post bail, then you sit in jail until your case comes up.
Right. So and that, if you don't have money to post bail, you don't have money for defense.
Exactly. So these kids, many of which, some of them don't know their lawyers. They don't know them well. They haven't had many conversations. I mean, it's just a difficult situation all around, and they sit there in almost this hopeless situation. But in the last few seconds, I do want to say I'd like to give some credit to Larry Krasner, our district attorney, who is sensitive to a lot of those issues and has been, you know, working pretty diligently to alleviate some of
in the face of a lot of controversy.
Lot of opposition, yes.
No question about that.
Yes.
Well, first of all, I mean, it's been an incredible pleasure. This has been the fastest hour ever. And just, you know, one of the most inspirational. So if you would, Pastor Jones, contact information at the church if anybody wants to reach out.
Yes, you can contact us at Bible Way Baptist Church. We're at 1323 North 52nd Street in West Philadelphia. And you can reach us at 215-477-0778, 215-477-0778. And our website is BibleWayBaptist.org.
And our host, what a successful debut show, Pastor Antonio McAllister, Pastor T. Contact information if anybody wants to get in touch.
Yes, the Second Shiloh Baptist Church. We're at 1433 North 21st Street, Philly, PA 19121. Telephone 215-232-8344. And the website is ssbc.org, ssbc.org.
Austin Weinemann, real quick, at Weinemann Pain and Wellness.
Weinemann Pain and Wellness, we're at 1 Penn Center, 1617 John F. Kennedy Boulevard, Suite 1100, 215-988-9503, extension 104. And before I jump, I did want Dr. Jones to, if you'd like, provide contact information for the Brotherhood Foundation or any information you'd like to share.
Well, right now, because of COVID, all of that is being directed directly towards the church.
Okay.
So you could contact us at, 215-477-3054. That would be the line to get through to Brotherhood.
All right. I want to thank and congratulate Pastor Antonio McAllister for an awesome, awesome, debut broadcast. Fantastic. I want to thank Pastor Jones. Unbelievable show. You're right about that. He's already back on the schedule, no doubt about it. I want to thank Austin Weinemann and Weinemann Pain and Wellness for making it all happen. And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. This has been The Groove Hour with Pastor Antonio McAllister. Thanks so much for listening. Hearts.